vitality. Even with his aching bones and a heart that had grown weak, Bernardo would walk the vineyard, test the grapes, watch the sky and smell the air. He lived for wine. He died for it. He drank, nodding by the fire, with a blanket tucked around his thin legs. Through his mind ran images of sun-washed fields, of his wife laughing, of himself showing his son how to support a young vine, to prune a mature one, of La Signora, standing beside him between the rows their grandfathers had tended. Signore Baptista, she said to him when their faces were still young, we have been given a world. We must protect it. And so they had. The wind whistled at the windows of his little house. The fire died to embers. And when the pain reached out like a fist, squeezing his heart to death, his killer was 6,000 miles away, surrounded by friends and associates, enjoying a perfectly poached salmon and a fine Pinot Blanc. Part 1. The Pruning. A man is a bundle of relations, a knot of roots, whose flower and fruitage is the world. Ralph Waldo Emerson. Chapter 1. The bottle of Castello di Giambelli Cabernet Sauvignon 1902, auctioned for $125,500, American. A great deal of money, Sophia thought, for wine mixed with sentiment. The wine in that fine old bottle had been produced from grapes harvested in the year Cesare Giambelli had established the Castello di Giambelli winery on a hilly patch of land north of Venice. At that time, the Castello had been either a con or supreme optimism, depending on your point of view. Cesare's modest house and little stone winery had been far from castle-like, but his vines had been regal, and he had built an empire from them. After nearly a century, even a superior Cabernet Sauvignon was likely more palatable sprinkled on a salad rather than drunk, but it wasn't her job to argue with the man with the money. Her grandmother had been right, as always. They would pay, and richly, for the privilege of owning a piece of Giambelli history. Sophia made a note of the final bid and the buyer's name, though she was unlikely to forget either, for the memo she would send to her grandmother when the auction was over. She was attending the event not only as the public relations executive who had designed and implemented the promotion and catalog for the auction, but as the Giambelli family representative at this exclusive pre-centennial event. As such, she sat quietly in the rear of the room to observe the bidding and the presentation. Her legs were crossed in a long, elegant line, her back convent school straight. She wore a black pinstriped suit, tailored and Italian, that managed to look both businesslike and utterly feminine. It was exactly the way Sophia thought of herself. Her face was sharp, a triangle of pale gold dominated by large, deep-set brown eyes and a wide, mobile mouth. Her cheekbones were ice-pick keen, her chin a diamond point, sculpting a look that was part pixie, part warrior. She had, deliberately, ruthlessly, used her face as a weapon when it seemed most expedient. Tools, she believed, were meant to be used, and used well. A year before, she'd had her waist-length hair cut into a short black cap with a spiky fringe over her forehead. It suited her. Sophia knew exactly what suited her. She wore the single strand of antique pearls her grandmother had given her for her 21st birthday, and an expression of polite interest. She thought of it as her father's boardroom look. Her eyes brightened, and the corners of her wide mouth curved slightly as the next item was showcased. It was a bottle of Barolo, 1934, from the cask her grandfather had named Di Terezza in honor of her grandmother's birth. This private reserve carried a picture of Terezza at 10 on the label, the year the wine had been deemed sufficiently aged in oak and bottled. Now, at 67, Terezza Giambelli was a legend whose renown as a vintner had overshadowed even her grandfather's. This was the first bottle of this label ever offered for sale or passed outside the family, as Sophia expected, bidding